Com.
This is Wisconsin basketball head coach Greg Gard. This is 94.5 ESPN, WKTI and WKTI HD2, Milwaukee.
A locally owned Good Karma brand station.
It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside former Packer Brian Belaga, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the Brian Belaga Homer Hour. The best segment of the Thursday Brian Belaga Homer Hour is when Brian Belaga and Jason Wilde talk. That's coming up soon. I handle the first segment, and because people say this is being nice, I introduce the Dr. Football Brian Belaga and ask how he's doing. Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. All right. Now, we get to the, what is it actually they call what the Packers are doing right now?
What is it? Mandatory minicamp?
Mandatory minicamp. This is part of the decision by the players' union to limit the amount of time they have to do anything in the offseason. And, right, so they, but they added this so the coaches get some time, but.
There's always been mandatory minicamp. There's always been mandatory minicamp. So there's the OTAs, which is the voluntary.
But everybody goes, right?
Well, in Green Bay, yes, because they always tie huge workout bonuses, and the OTAs count as a workout.
And every team could do that if they wanted to.
No, they sure could, but Green Bay has been doing it for a long time. Long, long time.
If you were in charge, would you do that? Do you think it's of value?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think it's good to get the guys back together in the spring and have them start working together and training together and things like that. And listen, being in Green Bay in early April when there could still be snowstorms isn't too enticing when guys are spread out in California, Florida, Texas, the Carolinas, and things like that. So to offer them workout bonuses to get them to return, obviously there's an incentive there, but at the same time I think it's good because you get guys back together and training and working together and kind of get that camaraderie built. So I think it's smart. I think it's good, and it's a way for guys to honestly earn free money. I mean, it's free money. Come show up, work out. You're going to work out anyway,
and so, you don't really do anything, right? It's not like, right, you said it's not real football. You don't count it as real.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now we get to, and you've left out the part that nobody on the team really wants to be in Green Bay. I mean, there are some exceptions, but limited. People'd rather be somewhere else. There's only one reason they're in Green Bay, and that's because the football team is there. So,
I mean, in early April and things were when they start back up, what is it in April? Yeah, I mean, guys are in Florida or wherever.
Right, they're not in Green Bay. Some live in Green Bay.
Some live in Green Bay, not many.
I bet you didn't live in Green Bay. There's no way.
Yeah, no, I got out in, 2013. I started going down to Florida in the off seasons. So, listen, I liked being in Green Bay once the golf season was back up and running. You could play golf because then you could really – you know, get your workout in, do a little bit of meeting time, and go drive right to the golf course. If you don't play golf, but who doesn't play golf? A lot of guys play golf.
More and more are playing it. That's correct, right?
Yeah, a lot of guys play golf. Even if they're not good, they go out there and have fun and just enjoy themselves. But and Green Bay golf is underrated. It really is. It's super underrated. There's some great courses in Green Bay. So,
underrated.
Yeah, because no one goes.
It's Green Bay.
Yeah, no one goes.
No one goes. So, they're Upper Michigan. Have you gone up there? They have just some, I think that people have told me, spectacular courses. Now, the problem is their season's like 3 days, but But it's the same way, unless you go up there for some other reason. All right, now we get to the offensive lineman who's doing work with the first team. I, of course, am very skeptical of any of that because I just make things this means nothing. But I could be wrong, and so I would ask you in your time with the similar workouts, how often that occurs, because that will tell me if it means anything. Sometimes it occurs if someone's hurt, but when you're just, I would say, an average draft choice, and for right away to be working with a first team, there's something going on there because I'm guessing it doesn't happen that often. But you'll set me straight.
Yeah, no, I said this to Strofe beforehand. I think this is something to look at, in my opinion. You know what I mean? I think it's something to look at because if we remember earlier on in OTAs, he took some reps at right guard, I believe. And we were kind of like, well, it could just be rotating guy. You don't know.
You're in charge of all OTAs, I basically.
Yeah. And this is the second time around now that he's taken, and it may be even be more because that was just the media period, right? That people could see, and it was open or whatever it was. But he could have potentially be taking tons of reps at right guard with the first team, and we have no idea. But clearly, an opportunity to the public or to the media, whoever it was open to, he's taken reps, and to me, if it's not the first time, it's the second time, because I can't assume that he's been taking reps. I think it's something to look at because it's showing that they like what he's been doing from obviously a mental and assignment standpoint. He's grasping the offense. And two, that from a technique standpoint, because that's really what OTAs is about, is technique and fundamentals. He's showing that he has those things. So in all honesty, it's something for me to look at.
All right, and now I ask you a follow-up. It's something you to look at. In your time as with the Packers, did you ever do it when you were a rookie, or do you remember any others where it occurred similar to this to give me some idea of what significance it might or could be?
You know, I'm trying to remember back to my first OTAs. I think I did take some reps off of Chad Clifton during my rookie OTA. So I did take some reps with the ones that I took reps off of Big Cliffy. He didn't do every OTA, and I would fill in.
Right.
And I would be
Cliffy never did every anything.
Yeah, exactly. So I took reps simply to rotate with Cliffy. I never took reps as the guy, going in as the guy. There was no assumption that, oh, Brian's taking reps with the ones because he's...
Yeah, no, you're filling in for Cliff because he doesn't do everything, so...
Yeah, I'm filling in for Cliff.
Yeah.
That was what it was. Going back, I don't recall a lot of rookies. Like, obviously, like, you look at a lot of the first-round picks, like, Nick Perry got a bunch of work with the ones.
Offensive linemen to where... The offensive linemen that are regulars would go, huh, this is surprising, or this is impressive, or they'd go, whatever. Who knows why they're doing that? But
I don't recall it.
Okay,
I don't recall it, especially as rookies. And we obviously had a very established group, so there were not many times rookies were coming in and taking reps off of guys, unless guys were sitting out that day or rotating in and out.
The Jason Wilde, Brian Bulaga, because that's how I compare everything. Is not what anybody says other than the players.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know, I've asked you this before, as a player, how long it takes or when you notice someone. Because when players notice someone, that counts. Everything else, who knows?
Well, and it really, to me, that takes place in camp. Is when you start to notice. OTAs, a guy has to really jump off the pages to be noticed like that. They're like, okay, there's a chance this guy could be a starter as a rookie.
Right.
And they're like,
now he's been playing at guard, right? I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, my assumption is that he's looked at more as a center, and now they're wanted to see how he could do at guard. And that more than anything else, not a reflection of his ability, but a reflection of exploring, could he play two positions? How right am I or wrong am I?
Well, you're very right. And he was going to have to play two positions regardless, because they have a starting center that they just paid. So he's not outing the starting center that they just paid.
Correct.
So regardless of whether or not, you know, he's a good center, and it's like, wow, oh man, we got a good center, and he's only going to take center snaps. No, I mean, he was going to be working at two positions regardless, because that group needs depth. As we know, that's been the biggest talking point, is depth on that group. He was going to have to learn two to three, well, obviously the two guard positions and obviously center. But it starts to catch your attention as he starts out with the ones, right? As the guy starting out with the ones, walking up to the line of scrimmage in team periods with the first group as the opening guy. So that's what catches my attention, because normally in OTAs, the coaches want this to be as clean as possible. They don't want mistakes. They don't want missed assignments. They don't want the drills being screwed up with, especially the ones. They want the ones to look clean, right? So for them to put him out there, that means he's doing everything right. He's performing cleanly, and that's
okay.
That's a credit to him, right? Like that's really the best, because that's what OTAs is. It's refreshing. It's fine tuning. It's kicking off rust. But at the same time, what drives the coaches absolutely insane is if OTAs are sloppy, if they look like crap. Like that drives him up the wall. And if there's going to be an offensive lineman that's a rookie that may throw wrenches in that, and he ends up being the cause of it, he ain't going to go out there. He just won't be out there. So for them to put him out there right away with the ones, it's telling me a little something.
Right.
Not telling me the whole story, but it's telling me a little something.
Yes, there's no way you can say that it's anything but good. It's just a question of how good and for whatever reasons. Jason Woodley would join a little bit, but before we do, are required, and I apologize for not leading and opening the show the proper way, but Brian can help me out, because I'm sure when we started, he thought, what? I thought we started the show the same way every day. And
I did. Yeah, I am.
Yes, and your question, sir?
Is Miz pitching today?
No.
Okay.
Now, I know I provide no follow-up. Could be they're not playing. It doesn't matter. Just he's not pitching. So whatever the there's no follow-up question necessary. And tomorrow the show will lead the same way. He's not pitching. I also wanted to ask you how much, if any, of the basketball game you watched last night.
I didn't watch any. Oh. I got updates on my phone. I saw the update on my phone that the Knicks were down like 30 points.
You should watch it, but this might not be the reason to tell you to watch it. I think it might remind you of Seattle.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no need for me to want to watch it.
Right, because the debate is, as was then, given what the Knicks did, did they win it or did San Antonio lose it?
I mean, to drop from that point deficit, you'd have to say San Antonio lost.
Well, except then there's even more where while they had that lead and they lost the lead, they had a chance to win it again. And it required more than just losing that lead.
I mean,
They had that's a question whether I would say it's the same. They had a onside kick that was not caught properly, too, I would say.
I guess – I don't watch basketball obviously as much as you do, and I'm not an expert at it like you do. But if you put $100 on the Knicks when they were down 30, how much would you have won?
A great question. Significant, and that's the change in betting, which it's good if you don't know too much. But yes, live betting. People, you watch a game and you think you know the sport. And you say, well, they're way behind, but they're going to come back. The only person that would have bet 100 when they were down 29 is just does that on a regular basis. And
yeah.
And I don't know what the odds were. I'm guessing the percentage. They do this on the percentage of winning. Bet 100, you win
$250, Homer.
If when they were down 29.
Yes.
That's nothing. That tells you that the odds makers believe in basketball, pro basketball. It happens more often than you would think. So it's not
that big.
Right. Because that would tell you the percentage of winning, chance of winning. That's what people look at, 99.9. It might have been they were up 20 in the fourth quarter. I mean, we'd have to look to see what – you can look that up to what – at what point was the percentage for San Antonio the greatest? And this is, again, this is the Homer rule of which I pride myself in. It means nothing. Means nothing, will be remembered by no one unless the Knicks win the title.
It's true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Now, if they win the title, nothing else will be remembered. The title will be the year the Knicks came from 29, the biggest deficit ever in an NBA Finals game. What happened to the other games? Doesn't matter.
That's right.
And everybody there. And it's already going to be a memorable game for anybody who was there. But if they win it, it's like the Ice Bowl. There's no way to describe how special it will feel and how many people will say they were there when you're a part of that. And
is the next game in New York?
The next game is in San Antonio, and then they would have a game six. Those who believe it's kind of fixed would say for sure that San Antonio is winning the next game. Now, I tend to believe the refs can give them the benefit of the doubt, but you have to prove you're worthy of winning. If you just go out there and suck, that you're going to lose. But if it's close, I would say yes. Benefit of the doubt. Going back to New York for game six, because either you create one of the happiest moments in Knicks history, because however they win that game, they're going to just remember game four, and the party's going to go on forever. And if they don't win, then New York will be saying, as I would take credit for and do, what was the point? There was no point to it. It didn't serve anything. We didn't even win the title. So what? We could come back from 50. If you don't win the title, what's the point in winning that game? And the people that I say believe that would say that the most are the players and members of the team.
I would imagine that's how they felt. I mean, if they don't win it, people will ask them about that game.
What's the point?
And they'll be like, why are you asking me about that? We didn't end up – we didn't win.
All
the
you did was tease us. That will go down as the greatest tease in the history of professional sports.
Literally.
Yeah, literally.
Literally.
And I want to say I hope the Knicks win the series for that reason. That game should be remembered, given all that occurred. But we'll see. And now I go to the cot, the doctor of football, and Jason Wilde, not necessarily in that order. But Jason is important enough that he has his own Jason Wilde Yingling hotline. Not everybody has their own hotline. Jason Wilde and Brian Bulaga next. Not entirely accurate. It is Jason Wilde on the Wilde Yingling hotline. We'll get the intro changed. To chat with the doctor of football, Brian Bulaga, who will do the introduction. He, of course, is aware that on this show we always ask people how they're doing early on, but he is Brian Bulaga, so he can do whatever he wants. Take it away, Doctor of Football.
Jason, good evening. How are you?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Is everything cleared up from all the incidents that happened the other day on Cheesehead TV?
As far as I know, great conversation with Keyshawn Nixon, so he and I are good. I still think it's a very interesting conversation to figure out if a guy who is a number one corner, whether Packers fans want it or not to be the case, is making $4 million this year. That's not what number one corners make. At the same time, I think we've seen from Goody that if you hold out, it's not going to do you any good, because if it didn't help Elgton Jenkins, is probably not going to help Keyshawn Nixon either. So we'll see what he ends up doing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So anything of note from these mini camps? Anything that stuck out to you or anything that caught you by surprise, or is it just pretty ho-hum?
No, I mean, a couple things. And you know, we talked about this, obviously, on Wednesday, but Jagger Burton getting the opportunity to play guard, you know, right guard at the last OTA that we attended, all 3 days of the mini camp at left guard with Aaron Banks taking the having an injury of some sort. I mean, you know, those reps still matter. They're you know how you feel about OTAs, but for a guy like him and for Matt LaFleur, and to me that's the thing that of all the things that stood out, talking to Tucker Kraft about his plan to not be on a pitch count for his first game. Talking to Micah Parsons about his timeline, talking to Jordan Love, like there's a lot of things that we learned during it. And, you know, I don't know how many of them will end up being true, but certainly the conversations we had. But the fact that Jagger Burton got that work and that Matt LaFleur chose to say that he is going to compete for playing time, like, as you well know, there's an easy way to answer that question. And God knows Matt LaFleur answers enough questions where he doesn't say anything, that the fact that he said that about Jagger Burton is significant. That means that there's at least something there that they think is worth having him compete. And whether or not he, you know how much they love to rotate guards, whether he ends up rotating with Belton or whatever happens, the fact that that LaFleur said that, I thought, was the most significant thing I heard during the 3 days.
So I guess my question is, what have they liked about him so far? Like, what's been that has stood out that he's provided them on the field, or what they've seen? Is it assignment sound? Because we know that's what OTAs is about, is being clean with the assignments. Or do they like him, how his technique is and things like that? Like, what's been the standout about him?
I think it's all of those things. I mean, first of all, I think he's got a pretty high football IQ and he's picked things up quickly. I mean, you know, the guy played 5 years at Kentucky. You know, he's not one of those guys that came to the NFL and was only 20 years old like you, right? Like, he's got a hell of a lot more college experience. And, you know, you're a really bright guy and you were able to pick it up quickly, but he's a guy that has the benefit of all that experience to have helped him pick it up that quickly. Because Lord knows, and you've seen it, there's been plenty of offensive linemen that came in as rookies that they did not get it, and they needed a redshirt year. Whereas someone like Elton, you played next to him, like he, you know, he did that. Like, so I think that's one. Two, you know, I just think he's built like a true guard. And, you know, we like to joke about how terrible of a guard you were. I still believe you would have figured it out if that was where they would have ended up putting you. But, like, Anthony Belton, does he fit the guard suit to you? Like, he looks to me like a right tackle and a guy that played left tackle in college. He's enormous, and he's got decent feet, but I don't know. Is he a guard or is he a long-term, you know, is he more of a guy that you could put as your swing tackle and play at left or right tackle if something happens to Jordan Morgan or to Zach Tom? And I spent time with Zach Tom yesterday, and as we discussed, you and I a while back, it does turn out that the patellar tendon tear was a partial tear, which I didn't know this, maybe you did. They didn't surgically repair it. They went in and removed like the debris and the damaged portions of the tendon, but then the rest of the tendon, because it was only a partial tear, heals on its own, which I had no idea. So he's hoping to be able to go, if not at the very first snap of training camp, early in training camp, and be fully cleared for the opener. If that's the case, obviously we all feel much better about their offensive line if he's on the field.
Yeah, I would. I didn't even know that. So what's going on with Banks that he would miss all 3 days of this?
Yeah, there's this weird thing about the off season. I don't understand it. It annoys me. And you know me, I'm easily annoyed. We don't talk about injuries. We don't even specify what they are. Like, I know only from a conversation with Jacob Monks that it's his biceps. But, like, Aaron Banks didn't say what it was. So, I don't know. But it's not a big deal. He did say that. And, you know, he was talking about how good it'll be to be fully healthy in training camp, which he wasn't last year. So it's clearly not something that they're worried about lingering. But, you know, again, it's great that it got Jagger, Burton some work. But in kind of the big picture, you'd still like to have your five get some work together. And you got two out of your five during this minicamp not even participating.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just me, but because of kind of how he was banged up last year, that makes me a touch nervous. But at the same time, I guess it is just – it is June, so there is, you know, that to be said. But I guess, you know, I don't know. Regardless of that, how has Golden looked in these practices? Have you noticed he's been getting more attention, by attention, I mean the ball. Has he been getting more of that, or has it kind of been a slow work in progress with that?
Yeah, I definitely don't think in 11 on 11 I have seen him get a ton of balls thrown his way. Like, it's Watson, Reed, him. It's been Josh Wiley as the tight end. They've been in a lot of three wides, one back, one tight end. I think you're going to see that all the time. It'll obviously be Tucker Kraft instead of Josh Wiley. It was Josh Jacobs most of the time. So, again, I don't know where the legal situation stands. We have not gotten any sort of update. They declined a Freedom of Information Act request. So I don't know where that's headed for now. But you would think that if they had significant concerns about whether or not he'll be available to them, they'd be making sure that, say, Marshawn Lloyd and Chris Brooks got a heck of a lot more work with the ones just on that principle. And there was no indication of that. So I don't get the sense that they are in overly panicked mode about whether or not he'll be available to them. Again, we don't know where that's headed. I will say, and I'm going to write something about this because the Packers were unexpectedly nice enough to post it to their social media. That's how good the throw and catch were. But yesterday, Jordan Love made a throw where he rolls to his left and then throws back to his right. And he hit Reed in stride. And Reed had a step on Edgerrin Cooper, who, as we know for a linebacker, is a pretty damn good coverage guy. We used to talk about Homer and I used to talk about wow throws from Jordan Love and how infrequently we saw them. This was probably the wowiest wow throw I've seen him make. And it was just, I mean, and LaFleur and Jordan and Reed, I asked them all about it. And I asked Edgerrin Cooper, who said, you just got to tip your hat. It was a great play. It is clearly a play they plan on running because they did not want to get into any sort of details at all. So when they run that and hit Reed for a 70-yard touchdown in the opener, I will bring up this conversation. But it was one of those throws where you're just – all you can say is wow. And the thing is that – and this is what I talked about with Jordan today. Two plays later, he's trying to get the ball to Watson, and Javon Bullard makes a ridiculous interception. I mean, it was as good of a play by him as the touchdown pass had been a couple of plays earlier. And so, as Jordan said, that's what practice is for. But I think if you're a coach and you're not rooting for one side of the ball or the other, it's kind of a great kind of parallel or balancing the scales of both sides of the ball making some big plays.
So has it been a competitive OTA minicamp period, you think, in your opinion? Has it been pretty competitive?
It was today. I will say this. I thought it was interesting. You know, LaFleur made a comment on the first day that he thought the offense was ahead of the defense, and the defense ate the offense's lunch today. Like, it wasn't even remotely close. So I don't know if he did that to put a little bit of a, you know, light a little fire underneath him or what. In fairness to the defense, they're the ones with the new coach, right, with the new system. So I would hope that the offense would be ahead. But, yeah, the defense was by far the better team, better side of the ball today.
How are guys on the defensive side of the ball say that they're taken to the new scheme? Are guys liking it?
You know, I think so. I think what's interesting is that they're clearly still in a feeling out process. And I'm sure that's partially because of what Jonathan Gannon has been very clear about how he wants to get to know these guys and design it the way it needs to be designed to match up with how those guys play. But at the same time, like I was talking to Cooper today, and I don't think he's got a great handle on exactly what his role will be, how he's going to be utilized, what it's going to look like.
That's interesting. One of your marquee guys?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we're also looking at a guy who, if you remember last year, like, and he admitted this to me. I thought it was really interesting when I talked to him today. Like, here's a guy who, you know, as we well know, as Homer knows, was the two-time defensive player of the week. Not the defensive rookie of the week, the defensive player of the week.
Yeah.
As a rookie. And he said, I had a slump last year. Which, again, this is the kind of stand-up guy that we need more of, right? Like, we need guys to be able to say, yeah, I didn't play well enough. And I've always told players that, you know, you get a little more grace when you do that. It's the guys that, and I don't want to single out Rashawn Gary, but, like, Rashawn Gary, that was not his M.O. Like, it was not going to be, oh, I could have been better. I could have been this. I need to be better. I'm playing really well, which, you know, again, it is what it is. But to me, I think we're talking about, you know, a guy who, given his raw athleticism and what all the different things he can do, right? I mean, you can see him, the way he runs, the way he covers. I think he can get after the quarterback. I would predict that they would use him as an edge, especially early in the year when they don't have Micah Parsons yet. I just think it's, and I'm going to write about this, I think, next week sometime, but I just have this feeling about him and Bullard that I think Jonathan Gannon is going to figure out a way to put both of them in a position, because I think they're both on the verge of real, like, legit breakout seasons. And so I also think probably, you know, when Cooper said that to us, I'm going to guess he's also saying that because he doesn't want to tip us off. But I would think if Gannon is as smart as LaFleur is telling us he is, I'm guessing he's got all kinds of things drawn up that they're waiting to get cooking once we get to training camp on July 29th.
Which is why I say everybody should be putting more pressure on Cooper than Van Ness in terms of elevating this year. Unless I have just to admit that he's just not anywhere near as good as I thought. The person who should wow him this year is more likely to be Cooper than Van Ness. What do you say to that, Jason?
Well, I would say that both those guys need, like, again, if these guys, because I was standing on the sideline talking with somebody today about this, like, I don't think nationally the Packers are being viewed like maybe we are locally about Super Bowl team and win the division and this and that. Like, I really, like, I got a lot of work to do, and I don't think if they're going to be as good as they think they can be, you know, I think they feel really good about their nucleus on offense, right? If it's Love, Jacobs, Watson, Reed, Golden, and Kraft, I think they feel they'll put that five. So I was talking about that with KBN or Kyle and Strolf today. I think they feel really good about that, but there's a bunch of guys that need to elevate defensively. It can't be Micah Parsons and the Pips. And so it is Edgerrin Cooper. It is Javon Bullard. It is, it certainly is Lucas Van Ness. Like, Lucas Van Ness, I understand you think he is what he is. I think there's a chance there this year. And the other guy, and I was talking about this with Tausch during practice when we were on the show, like, the other guy that fits kind of the same Van Ness role is that, like, what is Devontae Wyatt exactly? Like, we've seen glimpses of him being a explosive, twitchy, playmaking defensive tackle. He's also missed a ton of time with injuries each of the last 2 years, and he barely played his rookie year, right? He was kind of on that early in your career redshirt plan, like Kenny Clark kind of did his rookie year and then became a really good player. But it's time for him to elevate, too. So I think on the defensive side of the ball, for as certain as they are about their like big five at the skill positions on offense. I think they got a lot of guys they're counting on who really have to elevate for them to be as good as they can be defensively and to make it not all about Micah Parsons and the two safeties who are obviously both studs.
All right, now we get the last question for Jason Woolley. Sorry, Doc. Van Ness, Cooper, Bullard, Wyatt. Rank them in terms of who's going to have the best season. There's nothing to do with anything other than that. Who's going to have the best season?
Bullard, Cooper. God, that's hard.
I know it's hard, but, you know, that's fine. Yeah, you have Wyatt and Van Ness at a tie for third. That's okay. Sounds like it.
Okay.
For you
well,
to pick.
Let's do that. Yeah, let's do that. I like a good tie.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
Jason Woolley, All Packers All the Time. We need a break. And when we come back, we will have Brian Bulaga rank those four as well. I do want to tell you about Milwaukee weight loss because I started January 2nd or 3rd, 229. I'm now at 205, 206, 207. I could get down lower. Somebody says, Homer, prove to me you can get to it. Could. But my head, my face is now getting so skinny. I don't want to lose anymore. But I plan to be on 205 in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 5 years. I eat less, and I'm okay eating less, and it's all the result of the program at Milwaukee Weight Loss. You might do it differently. Doesn't matter. They can set it up. You get $200 off of the Milwaukee Weight Loss Summer Special. Book your free consultation at MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com, MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. Results may vary. How you do it may vary. But the key I would say is there's no but. I don't tell you, you do this, but, and then you go, no, you do this, but. There's no buts. There's no crazy stuff. No intense workouts, no prepackaged meals, bars, shakes, or counting calories and points. To me, and this is how I would promote Milwaukee weight loss if I was in charge in the future, but I'm not. If you can get someone to eat less and be happy eating less, they will lose weight. I don't think I'm breaking any ground. That's a key observer of the obvious. 262-235-3980. Yep. Tell him Homer says it's almost easy. I think that fits as well. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. Brian Bulaga's ranking of order of who'll have the best season. Van Ness, Cooper, Bullard, or Wyatt. Next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
As Brian Bulaga asked the question, the first question everybody in the state of Wisconsin should have when they wake up in the morning, is the Miz pitching today?
He's a freak.
He is not. We'll go no further because everything else regarding the Brewers is secondary. That's how great the Miz is. All right, now we get from Brian Bulaga, and I asked Jason Woolley first, ranking who's going to have, not ranking who should be better because of the draft. I don't care where people are drafted. Where people are drafted reflects on whether it was a good draft choice, not about how good a player is. Player's the same whether he's a first-round pick or a free agent. I better check to see that Brian Bulaga agrees with that.
Well, if they're starting, then yeah, at that point it doesn't matter.
Right. And then someone else judges how good a draft choice that was.
Correct.
And that is a part of judging talent and important for success as well. I quote Ron Wolf when he got so much credit for picking Donald Driver in the seventh round. He said in his own way, you're not very smart for giving me credit for that. If I was smart, I'd have taken him in the second round. I'm lucky he was available in the seventh round because everybody else was as stupid as I was.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, all right. Van Ness, Cooper, Bullard, and Wyatt in terms of ranking their performance this upcoming season.
So, I'm going to go with Cooper at one.
Yeah.
I think he's going to have a huge year. I think this defense and the scheme and how Gannon's going to move him around, I think is going to be huge. Because I think they're going to have to bring pressure early on. Which means Cooper is going to have an opportunity to go at the passer quite a bit, in my opinion. And he's versatile. He can be on the edge. He can do it through the middle of the offense. So I'm going to go with Cooper as one.
Number one, Cooper, yes.
And then I'm going to go with Bullard. So Jason and I are just flopping on that. And I think he's a fantastic player. I think the ceiling is, I mean, it's how good he can be is I'm not sure, right? Like, I think he could be an all-pro type player. But I think he plays really well this year, and I think he has a great season. Three, I'm going to go with Van Ness because I think he understands what's being asked and required. So I'm going to go Van Ness with three, and then Wyatt, which I think I like Wyatt as a player. I've been saying it forever. When he's not out there, there's a big difference in that defense, especially in the run game up the middle. But I think Wyatt comes back and he plays exactly the way he does. And, like, I think that's very good. But I think Van Ness needs to be a level above that, especially until he gets Micah back in the fold with him.
Okay.
And I think he understands that.
So you have Cooper, Bullard, Van Ness, and Wyatt.
Yes.
And I have the same. I switch Wyatt and Van Ness because every time I hear about Van Ness, it's always like, he should or he would. Or da, da, da. I mean, I root for all the players. So and all four could have great years. They could end up going, hey, it's a tie or whatever. But my fascination now, based on what you and Jason said, is to hear more about Bullard, because both of you say it, and you say it almost easily. It's not to the same degree, but it's the way you've always talked about Zach Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Just, he's good. Okay, yeah. Howard is, and Bullard seems to be moving into that area. And I don't know that we'll discuss it. We have a few more gatherings before the season starts. this to me is more important than what happens in the, what I call, meaningless workouts.
It's the season for no reason.
Okay.
That's the OTAs and...
Or every, a season for no reason, is that true of everything before training camp?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure I have it right. A season for no reason. And if anybody argues with me, I'll say, excuse me, that's not what I said. That's what Brian Bulaga said. And I apologize for interrupting the Dr. Football, Brian Bulaga. What were you going to say? It was Bullard we were talking about, right?
Yeah. No, we were talking about the season for no reason. And it's just there may be and there may be people that say, well, it's important for this and that. You've said it's important, or you found it important. Yeah, for kicking off rust, but in the big scheme of things, it is the season for no reason.
How about the season for this? Is the season for a little reason, a very little reason?
Yeah, but that's to kick off rust.
Because you're nice, you don't have people to kick off rust. Yeah. All right. Now we get to, if you were in charge, you're now in charge, and what would you just eliminate all of these, or what would be your? What's the best season for no reason, according to you?
What I would do is I would bring guys in for full 2 months of just skills and drills. So essentially, you weight train in the morning, and then you just do fundamental work every day for like an hour, hour and a half. You can do like a walkthrough only, and that's it. But before we go, I do have to, I gotta mention, because we are international. We're international because my dad, he's up in Canada fishing at the Timber Edge Lodge with his buddies Sal, Darren, and Rob, and they're listening. So we're international tonight.
He's from Iowa. No, he's from Illinois, actually.
Canada. In Canada, and we have a view in Canada.
Why aren't
you
there?
International. Because I don't like fishing.
Wow.
I'd rather golf.
But you like your dad. They do this thing, this bonding, and you say, screw it. I don't like fishing. You're tougher than people think.
Yeah, not to fish.
All right.
I don't know if I could be in a cabin with my dad doing something I don't enjoy like that for that.
I now have something to talk to you about other than not graduating. We're going to get your dad on to talk about his son and fishing. Window Nation, if your air conditioner never seems to turn off, worn out windows could be the culprit. You can take care of it. Now is it's so hot. Now you can solve it. Upgrade yours now. during Window Nation's buy four, get four free sale. Imagine new energy efficient windows and you get half of them free. Plus, you could even get no money down and no monthly payments or interest for 2 years. They're a proud partner of the Brewers, so you book a consultation and you could score a pair of Brewers tickets. Say, I want the Miz Day. Sale ends soon, so visit WindowNation.com. Window Nation, also proud partner of Wounded Warrior Project. Don't you think Brian Bulaga should go with his dad fishing, even if he hates fishing? That's for future shows. Maybe that'll be a discount liquor Twitter poll question. Nah, not unless you give it approval. ESPN National, next.
Pretty wet out there. Make sure you have your headlights on, too, if you're going to be having your windshield wipers on. Tow truck just got onto the scene on this accident, northbound 94, just about at Drexel. This is off on the left shoulder. This is that car that went into the median wall, and the front end's all crunched up. So we've got delays coming up from Ryan Road up to that point. Southbound 43, watch for delays from Keefe down through the Marquette to the KK River. Northbound, slowing down through the Marquette up to Keefe. Southbound 41, heavy from Appleton Avenue all the way down past Burleigh. Northbound's backed up from North Avenue to Silver Spring. Also eastbound on 94, backing up from just past Barker Road all the way to Moreland Road, and then you're back on the brakes from about 76th Street all the way to 27th. Westbound slow from 27th Street to Holly Road. More delays from Moreland Road past Barker. And then we've got a crash just west of Blue Mound Road. The right shoulder is blocked, so we've got delays heading through that area as well. Traffic is brought to you by Geist Garage Doors for over 70 years. Geist Garage